Hello, and welcome to the Blockchain.com podcast. My name is Nicholas Carey, co-founder and vice chairman of Blockchain.com. From the intrigue surrounding Satoshi Nakamoto, market volatility, Web3 innovation, and crypto regulation, crypto's journey to where it is today hasn't always been straightforward. In our latest The Story Of segment of the Blockchain.com podcast, we'll be joined by my friend, my business partner, and the co-founder and CEO of Blockchain.com, Peter Smith. As you know, Peter, we've got a little tradition around here with all of our new teammates, and we always introduce them to the company by asking them how they earned their first buck. So it's my honor and also my great intrigue to finally ask you this question. So when you were a kid growing up, how did you earn your first dollar, pound, euro, your first buck?
Well, I was a farmer. So I planted a vegetable garden, pretty large vegetable garden, and I would sell those vegetables actually at church.
Oh.
And so my very first dollar that I made really was as a vegetable farmer.
Mm. Okay, so from vegetable farmer to crypto pioneer, lots to cover. So we've been working together for over a decade. But looking back through the lens of time, you know, how did you first get interested in crypto and what was sort of your journey to discovering it?
So for me, I was always really interested in technology. So I had an uncle that was a radio man in Vietnam, and he became really interested in technology. He was a really early Apple Mac buyer, and you know, he kind of imparted that on me. And so I learned how to build computers from him back when people used to build towers. And then I learned how to program. And so I'd been programming, you know, when I was about 13, 14 years old. And had a very typical experience of building people websites.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was very interested in technology. And then my academic background is in statistics and economics. And so I think when you learn a lot about economics and monetary theory, you start wondering how those could be combined. And one of the things that I studied was the history of people attempting to create digital currencies. And I think one of the things that people don't understand is that Bitcoin was an attempt, but it was not the first attempt. There'd been many, many attempts, you know, all of which failed quickly for various reasons. You know, and Bitcoin, when it first came out, looked like it would be another failure. Not because there's anything wrong with Bitcoin, but because, you know, if you've tried to launch a rocket 19 times.
And they blow up 19 times.
And they blow up 19 times. And somebody says, hey, what do you think? Is the 20th rocket going to make it? You'd be like, well,
stats show.
Maybe not. And so I heard about Bitcoin really early on an email list. And to me, it was elegant. It was interesting. But I thought it was going to fail. And then I came back, you know, about almost 2 years later. And noticed that it hadn't failed. And that there were several hundred people all over the world running nodes. There was a forum where a very passionate community talked about Bitcoin, BitcoinTalk.org. And no one had broken it yet. And so I got really interested in it and really felt like it would be a great way to spend your time.
All right. So a lot of people may not know this, but before Blockchain.com, there was a project and a website called Blockchain.info. And tell us a little bit about the original sort of product footprint, the website, and kind of the founding, I guess, of the early days of the company.
Well, the very first version of the website was built by our third co-founder, Ben. And he built basically a search engine for Bitcoin.
Yep.
So at the time, the only way to find out if a transaction confirmed or what the hash rate was is if you're running your own full node and indexing the whole chain. And, you know, you'd hit control F in a text file. The site he built, it was a search engine, made it possible for anyone to see the data real time on a website and to search it. And it was the first time people could really see Bitcoin. And coincidentally, Bitcoin started taking off a bit more.
Yeah, that, like a whole graphical really, user interface for statistics, basically.
And that's still a really popular product. And actually, one of the first ways that I contributed was fixing some of the statistical errors in the charts that were on the website, making use of that stats background. But, you know, the product that we are most known for is our wallet.
Yep.
And, you know, that was a really pioneering product because up until that point, you had two choices. You could download the Bitcoin full node software on your laptop, resync the whole chain every time you wanted to make a transaction, so on and so forth, or you could trust someone else with your Bitcoin. And people think of Mt. Gox as the first big failure, but actually the first big failure was this thing called BitcoinWallet.com, which was like a you trust us with your Bitcoin experience. And the guy ran off with everybody's Bitcoins. And so there was a lot of interest in a solution that would be kind of in the middle. And so we built the first hybrid cloud wallet where it was as convenient as, you know, sort of a PayPal experience, but you had your own private key, which meant that no one could take your money, including us. And that's now a really popular model. You know, MetaMask used the same model, and many of these all around the world today. But we were the first folks to do that. And so the product got incredible traction, a lot of people using it. And that was really exciting.
Yeah, I think from everything that was designed on the Block Explorer, I mean, really the entire UI and UX for Block Explorers was sort of pioneered by blockchain.info. The wallet architecture was also pioneered by the engineering team at blockchain.com. That product market fit you talk about, being early, especially in our sector, was a huge deal because those early adopters and early cohorts all have had an extraordinary increase in their personal wealth and have helped pioneer and invest in the industry over the last decade. I think about that moment when we sort of really felt like we hit product market fit, which is something all small startups are deeply and quickly trying to get to. The wallet was launched. It took about 6 months. It acquired almost 100,000 users. And then over a period of 30 days, I remember this in 2013, it went from 100,000 to well over a million users. And this was also coinciding with one of the first sort of bull cycles in crypto in a meaningful way. So, you know, a decade in, we've seen several bull cycles and several bear cycles. And I was hoping maybe you could talk a little bit about how those experiences have shaped you as a business leader. I mean, CEOs in traditional financial services will talk about maybe two or three incidents in their whole lifetime where they have a very stressful, short sort of period of time or market volatility. But in our industry, we seem to have those in far more frequency. Now, they're not completely different from what's happening in the macro economy, except that in our industry, it's 24/7, 365, and those bull and bear cycles seem to happen with a little more regularity. So I've heard you talk about this sort of four-year cycle in crypto before, but I think for our audience and for anyone listening, to actually really understand the thesis is pretty important. So talk to us about the bull and bear cycles, you know, how it's imprinted on you as a business leader and how you think about it in terms of the longevity of the community, the industry, and in crypto in general.
Yeah, you know, at this point, people spend a lot of time talking about the cycle because they're looking for some hope. And there was this, like, you know, what was the hardest one? I think the first one, because, you know, it wasn't obvious that Bitcoin was a cycle at the time. And so I think, you know, the first thing to say is it's not really a four-year cycle. It's easiest to talk about it as a four-year cycle because it's a nice round number, but it's really a number of blocks. And if I recall correctly, it's about 211,000 blocks that are in between each difficulty adjustment. That reduces the new supply of Bitcoin being released every day, which, you know, means that less dollars have to come into the market every day to maintain the price.
Yep.
What is important to remember about it is that, you know, the good year or the exponential growth year is not as good as you think it is. And the low year is also not as bad as you think it is. Like, the key in it to navigating crypto for a long time is to kind of think of things as a 200-day moving average.
Right.
So that you're not so swayed by the big days, the big year, and so swayed by the bad year. And so, you know, it's an incredibly different and difficult cycle to navigate because, you know, a big move in equities in a year is 20% up or down. You know, a big move in crypto down is 80% in 6 months. 20% a day.
I think there have been 7-80% drawdowns in the price of crypto and Bitcoin over the last 10 years. That, yeah. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary.
And then there's, you know, been massive ups. Like, you know, when we raised our Series A, the price of Bitcoin was about $280.
Right.
So it really depends on the time horizon you're looking at. And sort of modulating your views in between those horizons is kind of the secret to longevity in the crypto space. You know, what I will say is, my basic mental model is there's going to be a really amazing year, an exponential year. Then there's going to be a really terrible year. Then there's going to be an okay year. There's going to be a good year. And then there's going to be another exponential year.
Right. Right.
So right now, I think we're in the okay year.
Yep.
And we just kind of have to keep building. And in some ways, this is my favorite year. Like, this is the year where you get to build, where you get to invest, and where you kind of see who's still left, who's still committed when it's not easy money anymore.
Yep.
And we're definitely out of the easy money phase of crypto over the last 18 months.
I would agree. So the blockchain.com core product offering is both a retail and institutional one. So, you know, you're the CEO of this business. Talk to us a little bit about that composition. Why it's important for our business to have a little bit of both, and then sort of the maybe vision over the next few years that's important to you that you want to execute on, especially during this building era.
So we're about 50% retail revenue and about 50% institutional revenue. I think that they're important to do both because they're very synergistic, and a lot of the infrastructure gets reused, which enables us to invest more and having really highly performant infrastructure that customers can access. Ultimately, you know, we are just a enablement layer for people, for institutions, for consumers, for token projects. We're just here to increase access to the crypto market, and we're here to empower people and institutions to be part of the crypto market. And so we're a very customer-driven company. You know, we don't sort of take views about what the future of the ecosystem looks like. We don't take a view that people need to use this or they need to do that. You know, good example is Lightning. People ask me all the time, like, what my opinion of Lightning is, and I don't have one. If customers want to use Lightning and they're requesting Lightning, we're gonna
build it.
Build it. If customers want to use a sidechain, we're gonna build it. You know, if customers want to use, want to do all their Bitcoin transactions on Aptos, you know, on wrapped Bitcoin on Aptos, which I don't even think exists, just for the listeners out there, then we'd do that. Like, we are ultimately here to respond to customer demand, whether it's from consumers or from institutions.
Yep. So helping people send, receive, secure, trade, and exchange digital forms of wealth and have basically market access.
Yeah, and increasingly staking them.
Yep. Okay. So the kind of backbone of our whole business started off as this non-custodial wallet. And I think there's always been this debate between the convenience of custody and the sovereignty of self-custody. Talk to us about the importance, though, in the long term of self-custody as a tool to help in financial inclusion and to build a very wide sort of community of crypto adopters globally.
Look, I think giving customers the ability to self-custody is fundamentally important because it's important for human freedom. And the thing that keeps me in crypto after all this time is the chance that we have to drive human economic freedom. And so to me, it's vital. It's super important. And I think we do it in a really interesting way. You know, our consumer product, our app, you have a DeFi wallet, which is non-custodial, and you have a custodial brokerage side by side. You can flip back and forth between the two with one swipe of your thumb. That's a uniquely powerful product because it's us telling you, hey, do you want the convenience of trading in custody? Cool. Do you want to not trust us? Transfer your funds to your wallet where only you have the private key? One tap.
Yeah.
That's cool too. And so I love that our product does that. It's really the only multi-custody cross-chain app in the market today. And it's been an incredible investment in infrastructure to get it there. But it's uniquely powerful, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, we've launched this hybrid interface this year. We call it the Super App internally, but it's the most advanced wallet service we've ever provided. And the market is responding very positively. We've had over 90 million people download a blockchain.com wallet, which is something I'm particularly proud of. But the team has done an extraordinary job with this.
And even in the bear market, we have millions of people using it.
Yeah.
which is crazy. I mean, one of the fun facts about the company is, you know, we power about 25 to 30% of all Bitcoin transactions, right? Which
on chain,
which is shocking to me.
Yeah. After all this time too.
Yeah. After all this time. And it's really a testament to the hard work of the engineering and product teams.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right. So you've recruited a lot of people over the years. I've got a couple questions for those that are out there that are looking to maybe work in the crypto space. You know, let's ask this one. What is your favorite interview question when you are evaluating someone to work at blockchain.com?
Oh, it really depends on the role. But a general question that I ask almost everyone is, what's the hardest thing you've tried to do and failed at?
Yep.
And I ask people that question because I want to see the scope of their ambition, the scope of their drive, how far they're willing to push themselves. But then I want to ask a follow-up question, which is, I like to ask people, what would you do differently if you attempted it again and you believe you could be successful the second time? Because I think it's also really important that we're sort of constantly updating ourselves and learning. And having that mechanism, that sort of reinforcement mechanism of getting better constantly,
yeah,
is the number one thing that I look for in my potential teammates.
One of our core values here at blockchain.com is to have an infinite mindset, which is beyond just having a growth mindset. It's about constant learning and constantly challenging yourself. And I think that's one of the things that's enabled our company and team to persevere through extraordinary volatility in one of the most hostile markets globally. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because you have a lot to keep up with, where do you get your news from? Like, it seems like there's an overwhelming amount of information, about crypto and also just the macroeconomic environment. There's also a lot of noise. So how do you stay informed and where are you paying attention?
There's a lot of noise. I read The Block for crypto news. Shout out to the Frank and the guys over there. You know, and I'll read some other sources, but mostly The Block. I read the Wall Street Journal for my mainstream news. I read a couple macro publications to keep me up to date on the macro. And then I'm in a couple, you know, Telegram channels where you get all kinds of random content. Just kind of keep an eye on the pulse. But I generally try to not read too much news. Try to do it sort of in a set window every day and just leave it at that. But the world is more complicated and fascinating than ever right now. We're like, I think a week away from a potential US default.
Could get spicy.
So it's a lot to keep up with right now.
Yep. Okay. So we're coming to a conclusion here almost, but after a decade of working in this space, like, what's the trick? There aren't too many companies that have been around for 10 years. And also on a personal level, there aren't too many founders or executives that have put that much time into a company. So, why are you doing it? And what's the trick?
Well, it's actually one of the misconceptions. A lot of people think that the only reason, the reason that there aren't a lot of companies from the early days here is that there weren't a lot of companies. There actually were a lot, hundreds. I remember going to the Bitcoin Amsterdam conference, there were hundreds of companies there. If you go back to that conference, really maybe only two or three have survived, us being one of those. So there's a huge, very brutal death rate for crypto startups, probably even higher than startups generally. And I think that the key to staying at it is, one, not to get too distracted by the highs,
yeah,
too distracted by the lows. The second is, crypto isn't a fast game. It often looks like that because you hear about people making huge sums of money on a token launch or this or that, the other. But usually there was a huge grinding period that preceded anyone making money in crypto. You know, so as much as it seems like a fast money space, to make money in a way that you're proud of,
yep.
where you're not scamming or pumping or dumping or any of these things that I wouldn't do, you got to be patient and you got to keep grinding. The way that I kind of maintain my energy is, first of all, reading a lot. I do a lot of reading to relax, to wind down. The second is exercise, physical health. You know, you're not very good if you don't have your health. And so it's important to like dedicate time to that. And then it's important to dedicate time to like your personal relationships. Like when you switch out of a mindset of thinking, okay, I'll be done in a month or I'll be done in a year or two. I'm going to be doing this for 20 years. You start to invest in those other parts of your life. And that ultimately will make you a better teammate, better CEO, better really whatever you do. And so I tell people, don't get too distracted by the highs, too distracted by the low. Take care of your health. Go for walks. Hang out with people that love you. And the last thing I would say is, I think this is actually the best time to join a crypto company.
Yeah.
Like the best time to join a crypto company is in the okay year or the good year. Most people join them in the great year. But that's hard because you're very close to the bad year. This is the best time to join a crypto company. So if you're out there and you've been thinking about doing it, you know, this is your moment. This is the time.
Yeah. I think that dedication to building deliberately and slowly and purposefully reveals itself in the long term to be extremely beneficial to the companies, the shareholders, and the community itself. And so that relentless slow pursuit, I think, is something that you and I have always embraced. Okay, so what's in store for blockchain.com in 2023? And then what are you most excited about? Let's end on an optimistic note here.
You know, we're going to do what we do every year, which is like, you know, put our heads down, deliver value to customers, improve our products, improve our infrastructure. And that's really what we do in a year like this. I'm really excited about layer twos. I'm really excited about having more transactional throughput and capacity. We'll shortly begin supporting most layer twos as well as a layer two bridge, which I'm really excited about. I really think that when you think about how do we serve another 5, 10 million users, it's got to be on some kind of layer two, whether that's an EVM layer two or Lightning. You know, you're going to need these layer twos to do that. And I'm really excited about supporting those from our product.
Yeah. So we'll be laying the foundation for the next adoption wave. And our team is very focused on that and delivering value to our customers around the world. So thank you very much. For anyone that's new to the podcast, blockchain.com has been around for well over a decade. You can sign up for free at blockchain.com, get your wallet today, acquire some crypto, and join the journey of being involved in building a better financial system for the internet. So thank you, Peter. Appreciate your time. And glad to finally get to ask you a few of these questions. Been waiting a while to get an answer to. All right.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always nice to be on the podcast that your company puts on. And yeah, I think, you know, the folks out there listening in the year 2023, yeah, the future looks pretty good. Just got to hang in there.
Hang in there. Cheers. Thank you for listening to the blockchain.com podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please like and subscribe to the show. And if your friends and family are embarking on their crypto journey, why not share this episode with them? If you haven't already, visit blockchain.com to sign up for a free crypto wallet today. We've been around since 2011, and we're the world's most popular way to buy, sell, and trade crypto. See you next time.